What's up, it's Chase Young.
What's up, this is Terry McLaurin.
This is Carson Wentz, and you're listening to Washington Football Talk Podcast.
Well, the Commanders came to Detroit with a chance to get to 2-0, and after about 20 minutes of football, that seemed impossible. Later, it would get slightly possible, but by and large, this defense can't stop anything, and it's going to be a major problem. This is the Washington Football Talk Podcast.
On the football field, the action happens in the blink of an eye. It's like that off the field, too, when you've been injured. In a split second, your life is changed. Whether on the field or in the courtroom, when you've been injured, you need the right teammates by your side. You need Chase and Boscolo, a law firm willing to protect and fight for your rights. On the football field or in the courtroom, having the right team determines whether you win or lose. When injuries change your life, call Chase and Boscolo, trial lawyers that care.
What up, everybody? It's JP Finley. I'm in a random locker room in Ford Field in Detroit. Mitch is here. He's in a different random locker room. Pete's at home, holding it down, recording the Zoom. Coming off just a thorough ass kicking, at least of the defense. The offense kind of made it a fight late. Got to remind you, we're brought to you by Orsman Automotive of Virginia. We ride with them. Want you to do the exact same thing. You can check them out online at OrsmanVA.com. 7 locations all over Northern Virginia. Kind of a weird game to react to because they did make it interesting in the second half, but they got smoked. And defensively, they couldn't get stops, especially late in the game when they needed to. The 60-yard run to Amon-Ra St. Brown was almost as discouraging because they'd come all the way back. And then a guy scored when he fell. Right? Like the dude fell over, popped up, ran to the end zone untouched. Like that. This is not Ron trying to say he's not concerned. It's just one game. Okay. But now you're giving up 29 a game through two games. The rush defense can't stop anybody. You got more injuries piling up. Your linebackers are not very good. Your secondary is not very good. Your offense can move the ball pretty well, but they sure as hell couldn't when it was still a close game. I think Detroit came out, a little lackadaisical. Commanders were able to put some drives together. That's great, but I got real questions about the Commanders' O-line, especially Chase Roullier left Ford Field on crutches. I don't know, man. Defensively, I think that was a really bad effort.
Yeah, I mean, you said it. Bad effort is the right way of putting it. You talked about a couple of the big plays early on. There was the crosser that went for, 60. You said the Amon-Ra St. Brown. DeAndre Swift had the big play when he fell over. The biggest issue with both of those is that there's just nobody close to these guys. It's not like these guys are making great plays and running away from the defense. The Amon-Ra St. Brown one, there was nobody within 10, 15 yards of him when he made that catch. The DeAndre Swift play, he fell over. There's a camera, the all 22, camera. There's nobody on screen on the game broadcast. There's nobody on screen. I mean, it's not so much that they can't stop anyone and guys are running through gaping holes, which is happening. It's that guys are just clearly in the wrong places or at the wrong time and aren't on the same page, which is the same problem that we've had over the years. Communication, blah, 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 all those things. It's a huge problem, and I don't know what fixes it because, again, it's the same thing that we've seen for 2 years now.
The Commanders look like a team that spent the offseason trying to improve half of its roster. The offense, which they spent resources on in the draft and in free agency and in the trade market, is better. The defense, which they barely touched, is just as bad, if not worse. And the hope was that another year in this system from Jack Del Rio and some better steps from Jamin, et cetera, would catapult the defense at least into respectability. But through two games, we're seeing that's not the case. And what we love about the NFL, but what is also so hard about covering it, is that last week the defense was bad, but the offense was really good. And the Jaguars didn't take advantage of a lot of the mistakes the Commanders made. So it's a win, and we can look past it. Now in a loss, especially one like this, where the issues are so glaring, you start to realize that this team, it's somewhere in the middle of what happened against Jacksonville, what happened against Detroit, but it might be closer to what happened against Detroit because the defense is depleted and not very talented and just easy to get yards on no matter how you slice
them. Yeah, I mean, defense was a problem last year. You didn't do anything to address it. You brought everybody back. And then you talked about linebacker. You literally brought everyone back. I guess you added Milo Eichler, who you don't play. So, I mean, maybe it makes a big difference when Chase gets back on the field. I'm not entirely sure it will. I'm not entirely sure we know when that is. You know, not having Cam Curl is tough. And I think hearing Ron talk about it today, I feel like there might be some frustration that he's not playing with whatever's going on, but they're never going to say that. I don't know. And now the offense did not help the defense in the first half at all. I mean, Dax Milne was a big problem. Like, stop taking kicks out of the end zone when you can't get to the 20, dude, period. Just stop. I've said it repeatedly, but DeAndre Carter sure would have helped you. He didn't cost a lot. You just chose to let him go. There seems to be the same that happened with Bruce, where they're just like, they run this incredibly small razor line of confident and complacent. Like, they're just like, ah, our guys know what they're doing. Ah, our scheme knows. Ah, we can figure it out. You know, it's like, all right, well, now you got a problem because you can't return kicks or punts. Three consecutive possessions started at the 16, the 3, and the 16. The 3-yard line, Dan Campbell went for it on fourth down because he was confident they could just get a stop. That's when they got the safety. You need to play complementary football. They needed to grind out a couple first downs. Obviously, they didn't. They kept setting themselves back, and then Detroit sputtered a little early, and then they were finally able to get it going. Detroit has some real players. Swift's a real player. St. Brown's a real player. Hutchinson. But, like, that was just such a bad defensive effort. And, yes, especially in the first half, the offense didn't help them. There was no semblance of old Bill Callahan's complementary football. But, like, it doesn't matter. I mean, the Lions' drive to make it, I think, 22-0 at halftime was – I mean, I think it was a 9-play touchdown drive where they got 6 first downs on the drive. So that was not – like, they had a lot of explosive plays, but not on that one. They just, like, casually picked up 6-8 yards a chunk and just kept going down the field. And it was probably demoralizing to the Commanders. And I think the biggest problem today is they got their ass kicked in the trenches on both sides of the ball.
Yeah. You know what's funny is – for the most part today, you had the defensive line that was rushing in concert, in tandem. They did a good job of getting after the quarterback and not allowing Goff to get around to the to get out to the outside and elude them. But at the same time, you didn't need to because players were just running wide open all over the field. And in the run game, I mean, those holes, Pete could have gotten 10 yards on some of those. I mean, they were gaping. And on the other side of the football, even before the Chase Roullier injury, the O-line struggled, especially the interior. You mentioned it, JP. The Roullier injury is really a difficult one because they, as I've been saying here on the pod, like, they don't really have a backup center. They're going to be working out Wes Martin, and I think they're going to try Charles.
They're probably praying Schweitzer can come back.
Assuming Schweitzer, yeah, that's when Schweitzer comes back from his hamstring. But even beyond that, the guards weren't particularly good either. Neither Norwell or Trey Turner were good. There was one play in the second quarter. They ran a sweep out to the right. Trey Turner pulled around, and a linebacker wasn't even really going to hit Trey Turner, just kind of gave him a little stiff arm, and Trey Turner went flying 5 yards back.
Turner got his lunch money taken, like, again and again and again.
And that was the thing. Today, you know, there were some – the safety, there were some plays that Carson – made some questionable throws or whatever, but so much of that was incumbent on the offensive line and how little time he had to throw the ball. He had guys at his feet within seconds. And look at the safety, and it was a race to the quarterback. It was almost like there was no O-line whatsoever because he had pressure from both the left and the right and up the middle. There was nowhere for him to go, nothing for him to see. Obviously, there are times you want Carson to feel the pressure a little bit better than he did in the first quarter, I believe. He took a sack where Cosby did a really good job of pushing, I believe it was Aiden Hutchinson, all the way around the outside. And Carson just kind of turned into the defender and he, like, fell into a sack, basically. But it's a problem, and it's not going to get any easier as you line up here and you have Philly in front of you and Dallas. And I mean, you know, hopefully this Chase Rea injury isn't bad, but I mean, watching him crutch out of there with the wrap on his leg, it's concerning because that O-line, that O-line's going to have a lot of work in front of them to be better.
I'm worried about, you know, as Mitchell lays out the issues up front on the O-line, I'm worried about the D-line's run defense. 8 yards a carry today, over 7 yards a carry for the Jaguars last week. Look at their next opponents, the Eagles, who build their entire operation on running the ball, and they have a quarterback who can do it. The Cowboys, they're going to not even need to worry about Cooper Rush being there without Dak Prescott because they can just feed it to Zeke and Tony Pollard. And then, hello, Derrick Henry comes to FedEx Field. So those are three run-oriented offenses on your next three games on the schedule, after playing two teams with good running backs who looked like Hall of Famers. So there's, and the run defense was a negative last season too. You know, as good as these guys look in the pass rush, which they do, Daron Payne is already on his way to a giant contract. Montez Sweat, while he hasn't gotten home, has been disruptive. They're working together in the pass rush. Their run defense, I don't know if it's the same issue and discipline's bad or if they're just being beat one-on-one or if the linebackers aren't filling in, but there's definitely just problems all over. And it could just continue to snowball and the opposing offenses can continue to just run up mega embarrassing rushing totals over these next, you know, 3-4 games.
Yeah. I mean, especially with Hurts coming to town, whatever, we'll address that later in the week. The biggest problem I see defensively is I don't see a fix to it. And for everybody that's going to scream and text us to fire Del Rio, that's not happening. It's not happening week two. Maybe it happens this offseason, but like, you don't, if you're Ron, you don't want to fire Del Rio right now because then by week 10, if the defense still sucks, people are blaming Ron. It's frustrating, man. The defense has been bad and continues to be bad, and they don't do anything about it. Just hope is not a strategy.
You hope that Davis takes the next step. You hope that, you know, the defensive line can figure out how to put together. You hope that you don't have major injuries across the O-line, but it's 2 years in a row now, and the lack of addressing it in the offseason is mind-boggling. It's tough to wrap your head around.
Yeah, I mean, but maybe you just got to question the evaluation process. I don't know, because it's like, this year they really didn't do much. They drafted Mathis, they drafted Butler, they drafted Holmes. Not a ton of signings. They get a deal done with Allen last year. Like, maybe these guys just aren't that good, dude. or the scheme sucks. Maybe that's it. But they drafted a defensive player in the first round for 5 straight years. Like, that at some level, even if it wasn't this offseason, that's a significant investment on the defensive side of the ball. Maybe the scheme sucks. Like, I'm done absolving. I don't know if it's players or scheme, but something is wrong. And not admitting that, I think, is part of the problem. Whether or not you admit it to me or to the media, fine. But, like, you better admit it in your room and figure something out, I would say.
They finally have an offense that can score, and it's trending towards a point where that doesn't even matter because the defense is just going to allow the other team to score a little bit more. So it's a frustrating, it's a great word, agitating, all those synonyms, choose one, apply it. And that's an accurate way to sum up how the Commanders are playing defense. JP, I'm looking at your rundown. You know,
we have game balls.
Yeah, defense being bad, Carson, and the offensive line running into trouble. I think we covered all those. We'll go to game balls and goats. Mitch, do you want to start? Did we decide in losses like this that there really are no game balls, only hat tips? I think that's probably a fair way to operate. But there might be some game balls out there with the skilled players.
Yeah, I don't think – I think the no game balls is when they get the doors blown off. there's nothing to.
It was positive. Tracking towards a no game ball situation, but they made a decent ball.
He was a gadget. He was a great gadget player. Again, he had a nice touchdown catch. He absorbed the huge hit in the end zone. I think he had almost 100 yards receiving, 7 catches, I believe, touchdown. I mean, he's stepped up and he's played well here. Every opportunity that he's been given, and deserves a game ball in my mind.
We live in a world right now where Carson Wentz and Curtis Samuel are probably the two best parts of the Commanders. And if I told you that a month ago, you would have bowled me over, Mitch, and punched me 100 times, and I wouldn't have blamed you. My game ball, I'm going to give one to Jahan Dotson. You know, 4 for 59 isn't a major day, but he had the 40-yarder to spark the offensive resurgence there in the third quarter. And then the touchdown he scored, not necessarily consequential because it was late and the defense had shown time and time again that they weren't going to do anything positive with their time on the field, but it was a really impressive touchdown. So Dotson, again, 3 touchdowns, 2 weeks, your offensive rookie of the year favorite, and really freaking good, and somehow is a really huge asset in the red zone despite being 5'11", 180, or whatever he weighs.
Yeah, I mean, I would give Terry one also. Didn't he end up being the leading receiver?
Curtis was 7 for 78. Terry was 4 for 75. Oh, okay. JP already has his road trip sickness, it seems like. Curtis and Terry.
My allergy pills.
Okay. Both Curtis and Terry also had first downs as running backs too. So I'm fine with all 3 receivers getting game balls. And Logan Thomas, who JP interviews at the end of the pod, 3 for 37 and a touchdown, first score since tearing his ACL against the Raiders. I think he gets one. And then from there onward, you're going to really have to squint if you can find a 5th game ball to award, unless you guys like had a good dinner in Detroit or someone was nice to you at the stadium that you want to shout out.
I mean, no.
No.
All right.
And maybe in a different setting, we'd be more into the shtickorama. I think we can get to go. I mean, I don't think Wentz deserves a game ball, but he was pretty good. He had a weird pick, had the safety. We talked about it. Like, he's got to just play faster, man. And then that big windup doesn't help. He's playing well, but like, there's got to be more cognizance between him and Turner when you're inside your own 5-yard line. Like, that something's got to register there. And then, you know, they ran that wide receiver screen on 3rd and 17, and people on Twitter were going nuts. Like, that was a avoid disaster play. Like, you should have ran more avoid disaster plays when they were stuck back inside their own 5.
Goats. This is an underrated one. JP already brought his name up, though, with Dax Milne. You're not explosive enough
for sure.
Taking the ball out of the end zone. Like, you can do that when you're a sick returner who has the ceiling of having a 107-yard touchdown return. I don't think Dax Milne has that ceiling. I think they have him back there because he's got reliable hands. So just kneel down or don't even touch the football. Let it bounce into the painted area and then go out of bounds so your offense can start on the 25. That's a low-key goat, but a goat nonetheless.
I don't even think it's low-key, but I'll go offensive line, Trey Turner specifically, but they were bad. Trey Turner was bad. So sorry, big man, if you wanted to expand on that.
No, I did my O-line bits. I think we could parse out a bunch of guys on the defense, but it's probably easiest to just say the defense, including Jack Del Rio. Like, we could go through, you know, guy by guy and point it out, but the effort on defense is just not good enough. And I don't know that it's really worth, if it's really worth going through. I mean, the Lions just moved the ball at will in the entire first half, on the ground, in the air. They did whatever the hell they wanted. Defense gets a go.
Yeah, throw a blanket over the defense, and then we can move on here to other topics. I think I'm okay with that. Before we do chips, JP or Mitch, do we want to talk real quick about the 2-pointers in the fourth quarter and the strategy? Agree, disagree, why it happened, all that?
Yeah, I mean, he's playing the numbers, and the numbers tell you to go for it again there. I liked the first one. I didn't like the second one, but, like, it's like you're playing blackjack. Like, if you play by the book and you know that that dealer has a 6, you're going to stay on 13. Like, you got to be committed to staying on 13, right? Like, whatever that is. Like,
you're going to play the stats, play the stats. I mean,
yeah.
Basically, when you're down two scores, I think you, the NFL teams get 53% of 2-point conversions. So the idea being that if you go, when you're down 14, you score a touchdown, you go for two. If you get it, then your next touchdown ties the game and the extra point would win it. If you don't miss it, law of averages, 53% says that the next, if you score the second touchdown, you would go for two and you would get it because you would be then one, it'd be one of two. Now, I don't know how much the analytics takes into account the fact that you already ran probably your best 2-point play earlier when they went for the 2-point conversion. So at that point, you know, you're going a little further down the playbook, a little further down, down the list to get there, but it was fine. I mean, whatever, it was fine.
It didn't end up mattering because they just kept giving up more touchdowns. Right. And then Joey Sly misses an extra point. Like, those are nits to pick. But the fact that when they cut it to one score, that St. Brown runs for 50 and then a guy scores when he falls on his ass untouched, like, I'm not as worried about the 2-pointers. And maybe that's silly, and maybe we need to be more, like, in – analytical and insightful, but I don't think that's for now. Like, I think that's for if we want to revisit it on Wednesday, or maybe Ron gets asked about it some more, like the philosophy behind it. But if they could get a stop, and if this thing comes down to a true one possession, like, all right, you know, I care more.
Yeah, I mean, I actually loved it, but in the end, it's pretty irrelevant. I just hope that, like we said with the blackjack thing, I hope he sticks with his strategy. You can't pick and choose this, do it one day and then not do it the other day. You have to commit one way or the other. And this felt like a departure from what Ron's done in the past, but that's fine. I liked it. And do it again when the situation arises in the future.
That's situational too, though. Like, I don't think you can have a blanket policy, right? Like, we're always going to do this, or we're never going to do this. Like, I think it's situational. Today, they kind of had to try to push the envelope.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Blanket goats, good. Blanket policies, maybe not good. All right. 100 chips. Thank you again to Mark Perina for sending these. The 100 chips this week. Mitch had the Commanders and the over in a parlay. A parlay with one leg that doesn't hit is a dead parlay. So, Mitch, I'm sorry. You were down to $0 after being up 100 entering the week. JP had the under. The game went over. JP, you were down to $0. I had Logan Thomas over 31.5 receiving yards. That came through. So I went from negative 100 to zero. So after 2 weeks, we're all at $0. Congratulations, everybody. Over-unders. Wentz, the number was 238.5. JP went under. Mitch and I went over. After the disastrous start, he cleared it with ease. Second category, Gibson, rush yards, 57.5. He finished with, I don't think it was that close, I just want to make sure, 28. So yes, I went under. Mitch and JP went over. And then finally, our debut of the roller coaster index, which is Carson Wentz's touchdowns plus his turnovers, 3 touchdowns plus an interception plus a fumble is 5. The line was 3.5. Mitch and I went over, JP went under. I went 3-0. I nailed my 100 chips and went 3-0 in over unders. I'm the first over under winner of the season. Congrats. Well done. To me.
But the worst part is you also thought they were going to win.
I predicted lines on the podcast, but on the pregame show, I switched to the Commanders after all the injuries. So yeah, we're all losers in that aspect. So lastly, at least the last thing we're supposed to do, we are required to do by law, is what makes you smile. It is presented by Dominion National. So while we love Orson Automotive, we also love KeithKeepers.com. where they provide high-value dental and vision benefits for individuals. Enroll today and save at teethkeepers.com. What made you smile? Yeah, after first half, there's going to be no responses here. I'll go to Curtis Samuel. I liked that his touchdown came on a deeper pass. He had a 27-yarder there, showing that he's not just someone who needs to get open 2 yards past the line of scrimmage. You can air it out to him a little bit, holding on to the catch there, being tough. Curtis, again, 2 touchdowns through 2 weeks, involved in all sorts of ways. I knew he was good. I certainly didn't think he was this good, and I love what he's done with Washington in 2022. JP, what made you smile?
Mitch, if you have a quick one, go ahead, because I don't know. Mine might be more complicated.
Good. really have one because the game didn't do much. So what made me smile was the nice stadium worker that just plied me with a Bud Light. So, yep, that makes me smile.
That was crispy. Right. Congratulations, Finch. Yeah. Drink up.
All right, so this is not what made me smile, but I just want to do it before we leave, so sorry. Teethkeepers.com. So Pete made what wasn't a joke, but later became a joke about how loud Ford Field gets. And I wanted to have a quick Ford Field discussion because on some level, you're right, Pete, it is loud. And I think for the television product, it seems like the fans are just killing it, going crazy. And I think some of the time that's accurate, but this place must pump in more noise and sound effects and songs and like drums than I think maybe any place I've ever been. Mitch, did you? And it also, and this is like a little too inside baseball, but the press box is like outside, for lack of a better word. The press box is like open air in the stadium. Usually they're like enclosed, so they're quieter, but it was like legitimately difficult to work at times. But they never stop playing like music. Right. You know how like NBA games are constantly playing music and the atmosphere is still kind of generally dead, at least until the fourth quarter. This was like really well produced and they had so much stuff that kept fans into it. Like at one point they were putting up like the Michigan Wolverine logo and then the Michigan State Spartan logo. And fans were like booing and cheering and just kind of going nuts. Like they had so much of that. It absolutely impacted the game, especially early on when Washington was just in that vortex of suck and couldn't get out. Like the crowd was really good, but being here, it's not just the crowd that's really good. Like it's there's some synthetic processed crowd noise going on.
Yeah, it was certainly loud in between, like very
certainly loud
plays. And that carries over when you get the fans kind of riled up and going. I think also a lot of it helped that they were just kicking the Commander's tail up and down the field, left and right. You know, like that helps out and keeps the crowd.
Yeah, beating ass is fun for football teams.
In the third quarter, when the Commanders were making that comeback, it was starting to get real quiet around there. It was starting to sound like I've experienced Ford Field over the years. This place has been a tough place for the Commanders to come play. I think this is 5 straight losses for them. I think they've won in 2008, the first year we were there, that I was here. I don't think they've won since then. I mean, it's a weird bugaboo for this team.
I mean, I'm not going to take a huge victory lap because if it's music based, then it's not the 60,000 roaring Lions fans I anticipated. But loud is loud, and for the opponents, that makes a difference. So. We'll call this one a draw. And JP, good idea bringing it up because a lot of people were tweeting about it. A lot of people cared about picking sides in the Ford Field debate. So I'm glad we've settled it basically right down the middle.
Well, am I still muted?
No, you're there. We hear you.
Okay. The only thing I would add was that you compared it to Lambeau and whatever the Vikings joint is called. And I would say that those are still louder than this. But Lambeau doesn't do any of the song and dance. Like, Lambeau's like not manufacturing any of that noise. It's like legitimate. I don't know. I enjoyed Ford Field. It's a nice place. The Wi-Fi wasn't working, caused a lot of trouble. But all in all, you know, I just wish Mitch and I got to play a hell of a round of golf. I took a little money off the big man. And
JP was a stick on the back. He couldn't miss. It was impressive. I think it was the best. Maybe the best I've ever seen JP play. It was incredible.
Oh, congrats, Japes.
For 9 holes. God forbid I put it together for
42. We saw what happens when a football team only plays half a game, and apparently only played half a round of golf. So we'll try and get both you guys to full speed.
I say we go to the interviews. We'll be back maybe a couple times this week, depending on Philly week's going to be big, and hopefully we're talking to Wentz this week. But I don't know, man. Ron said something last week that stuck with me that, you know, he didn't want this to become a there here we go again situation. And today felt very here we go again. I hope I'm wrong. Go beat Philly. But I don't know if you guys agree with that.
No, I think you're right.
They're 1-1. they could very well be 0-2 right now. You could look at like the Broncos, who had a relatively easy opening to the season, where the NFL kind of was hoping that they would start, 2-0, and who knows what happens with the end of this Texans game, but they're certainly not blowing anyone's doors off. It's bad today. It could certainly be worse. It could certainly be better. It could be worse.
Safe travels home, you two. Talk to you at practice. Here is Logan Thomas and JP Finley postgame.
Logan, thank you for the time today. Obviously not the way you wanted this one to go. Let's start early on, when it just seemed like everything was going Detroit's way. How did that happen, and how frustrating was that?
I got to give credit to them. They came out with a lot of fire, a lot of determination, and they were working hard. And we were just missing one thing here, one thing there, and it wasn't just one person or one play. It was just multiple plays. And once you got to the second half, you saw where we can really be.
What changes that your guys' offense is able to start going and start clicking? Because there are weapons all over the place, and you saw it in the second half.
Yeah, I think it's just making that first play, getting a little bit of tempo going, and getting in a groove. And then once we got in the groove, we were rolling. But I got to give credit to them. They did a good job of keeping us out of that groove early.
As a former quarterback, what's it like when you see Carson taking some pretty big licks?
I feel for him, man. It's everybody thinks quarterback's just that glorified position, and everybody – everything's rosy back there, but they take some of the hardest hits, and a lot of the times they don't see him coming. So he did a great job standing in there, being tough, being the leader that we needed him to be. Then you got to see who he really is in the second half.
Brian Mitchell has a question for you in studio.
And Logan, as a former quarterback, I know you're a type of guy who you can get your team motivated, and I watch you most times, and you're always so even keel. I just wonder, how do you help the team to not slip into what you all did in the first half? Because I believe if you all play consistent, you're going to win way more games than you're going to lose.
Oh, absolutely. 100% agree with you. And for us, it's just, it's just making sure that we take care of the little things. Don't worry about what happened in the past. Don't worry about what's to come in the future. Just worry about the play that's ahead of us, because if we do that, we'll be fine. We are super talented. We are dangerous as an offense, and we just got to do that.
It's a young team, particularly on defense. Defense had a rough day today. How do you keep that message of positivity and bringing it to the next week in the locker room?
Well, I think when we go back and watch the film, you'll see the positive things that we did, see the things that we did bad, and we learn from those. And that's what this game is about. It's a 17-game season. Week two is not going to make our team, crumble. It's not going to make our team be the best team in the league. It's about building every single week, and if we can learn from it, then we'll be better next week, and then we start building blocks.
What about for you getting back in the end zone today?
It felt great. Obviously, I would have wished that we would have done it with a win. But it's kind of come full circle for me, the rough last year that I had, and then feeding into this year.
How exciting is it to be part of this offense now, and it looks like you're fully healthy or darn close?
I'm excited to be a part of this offense, the best offense I've ever been a part of. I think we can roll. I think we got the talent, we got the skill in every position to be a really, really good offense. Obviously, with what happened to Roulier today, that sucks. But the next man will come in and play well, and I'm excited to see where we go. We can put some points on the board.
Thank you for the time today, man. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Vortex of suck.
Oarsman opened its first car dealership in 1921. Now, over 100 years and many dealerships later, Oarsman of Virginia can proudly say that when it comes to your car buying needs, if you want it, we've got it. Saving, selection, and service? Check. Lifetime engine guarantees? Check. Loaner cars and free car washes? Check and check. See, over the past 100 years, we've learned that to succeed in business, we've got to keep our customers happy. And that's the Oarsman story.
Oarsman, Key of Alexandria. Let's ride together.